Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, and we also want to let you know we're sponsored once again today by Simply Safe Home Security. Protect your home the smart way without the expensive long-term contracts using Simply Safe Home Security. Visit simplysafe.com/ricochet. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. And we'll have more on a great deal that they're offering a little bit later in the podcast. So, Jim, let's go to our good martini. And it's also the lead item in the morning jolt today. It looks like Trump is very close to picking his nominee to replace Antonin Scalia on the U.S. Supreme Court. He has said that he's going to announce it next Thursday. That's February 2nd. And according to most of the reporting that has these anonymous senior sources involved, it's down to two names, both of which conservatives should be pretty darn comfortable with. One is Judge Neil Gorsuch. He's based on the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals out of Denver. The other is U.S. District Court Judge Thomas Hardiman of Pennsylvania. These are pretty young guys. Gorsuch isn't even 50 yet. Hardiman is just 51. Gorsuch is believed to be kind of in the Scalia mold. And if there's any major difference, is that he defers less to the federal government than Scalia. And Hardiman's got a very good track record of siding constitutionally in a way that constitutional conservatives would appreciate. This will obviously be a huge fight, but it looks like if, in fact, these are the two people that Trump is now trying to decide between, conservatives can breathe a sigh of relief here because it looks like he can't lose.
One of the rumors that had come out in the last couple of days was that Pryor's stock was dropping. Apparently, he had met with Trump and he was on that original list, but that the search was looking at other options. And most folks, I would suspect, are not terribly familiar with Judge Gorsuch or Hardiman. Went to SCOTUS blog for these profiles. The Judicial Crisis Network is putting out information about both of these guys. Greg, have you ever had like a really good choice? And then you look at elsewhere on the menu or something like that, or elsewhere in the store, and you see another really good choice, and you're kind of left there stuck trying to decide between two really good choices? That is where we are right now. I think Trump is apparently going to announce his pick a week from Thursday. Yes, that's Groundhog Day. I don't know if that's a symbol that he hopes to be doing this over and over again for a long time. But I mean, Gorsuch versus Hardiman is going to turn into the, taste great, less filling debate amongst conservatives because they're both really good. And it's not like, as you pointed out, there's not a huge difference in ages. Not a huge difference. When you hear Gorsuch described as, he's like young Scalia, many conservatives' heart goes pitter patter. This is this guy sounds ideal. And then you read about Hardiman, and Hardiman has this great record, nice life story. I liked a little bit about him driving a cab to put himself through Georgetown. These were two guys who were on the list, and everybody on the list that Trump had announced during the campaign were pretty darn solid. But you could just see, either one of these picks, really exciting conservatives, really looking like a solid, you can choose the term you prefer, strict constructionist, originalist. Some people say it's not necessarily accurate to describe conservative justices as conservative, but whatever term you like for the kind of justices we like, these two guys seem to meet the criteria. Easy to see a Republican Senate approving these guys pretty quickly. And I don't know, you look at both of these picks and you're trying to decide between the two. Greg, I don't know about you. I'd be calling around the remaining eight justices and just asking, so how you feeling? Ruth Bader, you doing okay? All right. Clarence, are you enjoying the RV? during summer breaks? You want to spend, no thoughts of retirement? Okay, just wonder, two really good picks. So this could be a big early victory for the Trump administration. We probably shouldn't put the cart before the horse. We don't have the nominee. But if these are the two finalists, looks like two really good choices and maybe a tough one ahead for the Trump administration.
Yeah, and of course, no matter who it is, I can already hear Chuck Schumer using the phrase out of the mainstream with the glasses down at the end of his nose and promising a vigorous fight and all this stuff. Yeah, but it's good. This is where elections have consequences. Speaking of elections having consequences, Jim, we move on to our bad martini now. And once again, we're facing the odd specter of a successful presidential candidate claiming there was rampant voter fraud in the election that elected him president. And it's obviously because Donald Trump wishes he had won the popular vote. This was what happened yesterday in the White House briefing room.
Does the president believe that millions voted illegally in this election? And what evidence do you have of widespread voter fraud in this election, if that's the case?
The president does believe that. He has stated that before. I think he stated his concerns of voter fraud and people voting illegally during the campaign. And he continues to maintain that belief based on studies and evidence that people have presented to him.
But exactly what evidence? Speaker Ryan today said there's no evidence. The National Association of Secretaries of State say that they don't agree with the president's assessment. What evidence do you have?
As I said, I think the president has believed that for a while based on studies and information he has.
And then this morning, Donald Trump tweeting, I will be asking for a major investigation into voter fraud, all caps, including those registered to vote in two states, those who are illegal, and even those registered to vote who are dead, and many for a long time. Depending on results, we will strengthen up voting procedures. Jim, there's definitely work to be done on cleaning up the rolls. This is something that Eric Holder and the Justice Department vigorously refused to do in just cleaning up rolls of the dead people, of people who have moved from one state to another. That would be a far more normal way to approach this than continuing to claim that you somehow won the popular vote because of millions and millions of illegal votes that nobody else seems to be able to verify.
Yeah, this is bad on two levels. One, what the president said, there's really no evidence to confirm it or suggest it. And it's just not good to see the president of the United States going out and saying something that's lying. But what's also really bad is that he really doesn't have a grasp on how an exaggerated statement like this hurts the cause of actual fighting against voter fraud. Talk to John Fun, talk to Hans von Spakovsky, talk to almost any election law expert. They'll say, yeah, it happens. It exists. Is it, you know, it happens at a level where you could see it altering the results of a local race. When Trump talks about people being registered in more than one state, this happens. I believe it was the New York Daily News back in Florida in 2004. It found, let's say 800, 900 people. Now, most years, that's not going to be enough to swing an election result. In 2000, it was, right? And this is the sort of thing we should not poo-poo and we should not dismiss out of hand like most Democrats do, much to our suspicion. But when you say 3 to 5 million, like, you know, there are a lot, most of these states have Republican secretaries of state. They have certified the results as accurate and fair and not including this kind of level of electoral fraud. So this is bad in that the president is obviously kind of speaking out of you know, awful insecurity and anxiety and a fragile ego. But also at the same time, he's making this so wildly exaggerated that I suspect he makes it easier for Democrats and the media, perhaps I repeat myself, to say, oh, poo-poo, this is nothing. This is, you know, talking about Bigfoot and Elvis and UFOs. It doesn't happen, and it's crazy talk to be concerned about voter fraud at all, which is not the case.
This isn't even something he should necessarily be saying publicly. If you want to look into some of those areas of cleaning up the rolls and so forth, that's a decision that should be announced by the Elections Division of the Justice Department. For him to be doing it in this way just makes absolutely no sense at all. But we've kind of come to expect that in a number of ways from him. Jim, I don't know how you would put SimpliSafe Home Security looking at every voting booth in America, but I'm sure SimpliSafe Home Security would love the contract because that would be a lot of new cameras. And I'm guessing that they would love to be able to fulfill that contract. Their cameras are kind of the hit of the industry right now, because in early January, the Consumers Electronics Show wrapped up. The CES, as it's known, is obviously one of the best known trade shows in America. It's out in Las Vegas. They always have the cutting edge gadgets. All the big tech companies are there with their newest innovations. It's really like seeing the future in front of your eyes.
Now, our sponsor, SimpliSafe Home Security, was there, and they had one of the most talked about products at the show, the new SimpliSafe security camera. It connects to the sensors in your alarm system. If an intruder tries to break in, the camera will automatically start recording. Then, not only will your SimpliSafe security system call the police, but you'll have actual evidence when the police get there. When the police arrive, you can say, here's the guy, go catch him. It is truly incredible.
You can check in at home anytime, no matter where you are. Just live stream HD footage directly to your smartphone. Plus, with SimpliSafe, there are never, Never any expensive long-term contracts that you get with some of those other companies. If you want to see for yourself what SimpliSafe's brilliant technology can do for your home, visit simplisafe.com/ricochet. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. You'll even get the special 10% discount. That's only, though, only at simplisafe.com/ricochet. All right, Jim, on to our crazy martini now, but back to the Trump Twitter feed. Yesterday, Tuesday, he says, quote, "If Chicago doesn't fix the horrible carnage going on, 228 shootings in 2017 with 42 killings, up 24% from 2016, I will send in the feds." Plenty of reaction coming from Chicago. The police in some ways saying they would actually welcome any federal help in prosecuting what they call gun crimes. This story, however, from the Chicago Tribune says a spokesman for Mayor Rahm Emanuel referred reporters to an interview on WTTW Channel 11 Tuesday night. Asked in that conversation about the White House website under the Trump administration citing violence in Chicago, Emanuel said that federal agencies, including the FBI and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives, already do help the city, but more could be done. Quote, "There's a lot the federal government can do," Emanuel said, citing gun control, use of federal resources to track illegal guns, and federal prosecutions. Quote, "And also, fundamentally in my view, also help fund additional police officers. Over the years, the federal government stepped back their resources, which we have stepped up. The federal government can be a partner, and to be honest, they haven't been for decades." Now, Trump claims that the Chicago police could handle this if they want to. But, Jim, it's just a shame that there's nobody who's been in power in Washington recently who's got any sort of connection or affinity for Chicago.
Yeah, there were two things that jumped out at me when I saw that statement from Rahm Emanuel, Greg. The first is, let me get this straight. So the federal government under two terms of President Barack Obama ignored Chicago. They shortchanged the city. They didn't care about Chicago. If only somebody with closer ties to Chicago had ended up in the Oval Office, maybe that could have done something. Secondly, you know, you'd think that Rahm Emanuel could call his old buddy, President Barack Obama, and say, "Hey, I could use some help here," considering how the fact that Rahm Emanuel was White House chief of staff for a bunch of years. What, did he lose his Rolodex? Are they not taking his calls anymore? What? Why would, you know, the Obama White House, even with a Republican presidency or Republican controlling Congress, suddenly not be helpful to Chicago if it really was that? And then the third thing that comes to mind, Greg, so this is why Chicago has the really high homicide rate. It's the lack of help from the federal government. Other big cities which have had, you know, their own problems with crime, but nowhere near on the level of Chicago. Take your pick. New York, L.A. You know, they're big. You know, basically no city in the country has the problems with gang violence and shootings and exploding homicide rate and you know, just, you know, innocent civilians getting caught in the crossfire anywhere near the scale that Chicago does. So the federal government decided to help every place except Chicago? Is that the explanation we're supposed to get here? So this is really implausible blame shifting on the part of Rahm Emanuel and kind of laughable. My sneaking suspicion is that a lot of, you know, Chicago Democrats are going to say, oh, it's Trump's fault. It's Republicans' fault, without ever kind of recognizing, hey, wait a minute. At what point does the buck stop with Rahm Emanuel and the folks who've been running the city? And if it really is a federal problem, why didn't their hometown guy, why wasn't he able to do something over the last 8 years?
If he was still alive, I can just imagine Marion Barry, the former D.C. mayor, saying, wow, you guys got a murder problem there.
To use a very old Dennis Miller joke, Greg, to close out, I was going to observe that for a long time, Washington, D.C. was the murder capital of the world. And people disputed this, saying, wait a second, by sheer number of murders, it wasn't higher than, you know, Bogota, Colombia during the height of the drug wars, some places in Mexico these days. So some people say, should you measure it by total number of murders or should you do it by per capita? Because even then, some places like Youngstown, Ohio can actually jump ahead of that. So I don't know about you, Greg. This is why I think we need a playoff system. Determine who the real champion is instead of relying on this, you know, murder statistic BCS system. But, yeah. Anyway, if we can't laugh at really horrible violence in cities, Greg, when can we laugh?
If you're arguing over the methodology, you got a problem. Jim, have a good day. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And remember to visit our friends at Simply Safe Home Security. Check out that very cool new Simply Safe security camera and their 10% discount, simplysafe.com/ricochet, SIMPLISAFE.com/ricochet. Join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.